Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Family Business Radio. For our new listeners, I want you to want to state what our purpose is so you'll understand and hopefully come back and share many broadcasts with us. The Family Business Radio is here to showcase family businesses and build a community. It's also designed to educate, inform, and support family-owned businesses. And each week, our guests will include family business owners, key executive non-family members who are helping to drive those businesses, and the trusted professional advisors that assist them. And the show is hosted by me, Pat Rombaletti, and my co-host, Meredith Moore. Hi, Meredith.
Hey, Pat. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Great. We had a great show last week.
Fabulous.
And really, I wanted to talk first about our three guests last week really showed us the power of how three trusted advisors can collaborate. And this week, what we want to do is take that to the next level. We have three professionals with us today, but who regularly work together to best serve the family business owner during times of conflict.
Exactly. And our major focus today will be a conflict that actually, if you look at the statistics, 50% of marriages end in divorce. And if you look at the next statistic that says about 80-plus percent of businesses are family-owned, there is some place where those two statistics intersect and divorces become a big reality. And it's probably one of those key factors that leads to the fact that so few businesses get to the third or fourth generation. We know that this is one of the factors that interrupts that. So our show today is going to take a look at the topic, but more importantly, take a look at it in terms of a different way to handle a divorce within a family-owned business that hopefully keeps the family business together even if the family breaks up through divorce. So our guests today start with Amy Wagner, who is one of the principals of Wagner Hastings LLC. It's a collaborative family law firm. Amy, we are honored to have her. She was just recently named to one of the top 50 women lawyers in Georgia by the Atlanta Magazine and Super Lawyers. And I did a little research to identify that there are 32,628 members of the Georgia Bar. So to be associated with just the top 50 is really a huge achievement, Amy. That's really great. Can you tell us a little bit more about your practice?
Sure. I'm a senior partner in Wagner Hastings LLC. We're actually a full-service family law firm. So we do everything from collaborative practice, divorce, custody and visitation, child support, prenups, adoptions, and we also have a pretty large practice in domestic partnership and dissolutions. Our practice has four lawyers with over 50 years of combined experience. I personally do collaborative practice and mediation, arbitration, and any combination of those. Our focus of the practice is the compassionate practice of family law. So we want to minimize the destructiveness. We want to maximize the creativity and the efficiency in the solutions we find. And really, we know that people want to save their money for their kids' college. They don't want to pay lawyers to fight about this. So we try and get them efficient, creative solutions.
And I know that your tagline on your website is finding solutions for dissolutions, and
yes,
that's a big piece of what I know you'll be talking about today. So thank you,
yes,
and welcome.
Is. Thank you.
Marcia, can you talk to us a little bit about your practice? And I'm going to let Pat give us a little bit of background about you.
Yeah, Marcia is is a member, has a master's in clinical social work, and she's been in that field for over 25 years, 20 years with her own practice. But most importantly, one of the key factors recently that's very pertinent to today's discussion is, I know, Marcia, in 2004 you received your training as a collaborative divorce coach and child specialist. Tell us a little bit more about your practice and why you made that change.
Great. Yes, I am a licensed clinical social worker, and part of my practice is in doing a lot of marital therapy and working with adults and children who are dealing with dissolving their marriages and divorce. Collaborative is something that I became involved in about 2004, and did that because I was seeing the destruction that occurs in families as a result of divorce. So my practice specializes in collaborative as well as working in the area of co-parenting and helping children to get through the process of divorce, as well as helping the adults get through the dissolution of their marriage. Along with that, because there are lots of roles that a clinical social worker can play, I then expanded my practice from collaborative into mediation and work with a team of folks that are around this table, and also work in mediation and arbitration, because we can all collaborate and bring different areas of expertise together to be able to come up with an excellent outcome.
That's fabulous. And Bob, I know you are Senior Vice President of Consolidated Planning Corporation, and in researching your background, I saw that you are a certified divorce financial analyst and a registered mediator and arbitrator with the Georgia Office of Dispute Resolutions. Can you tell us a little bit why, in your case, you've been doing this for 25 years, you also chose that focus?
Yes. It was something that I had come into 25 years ago when I had a couple who I had worked with on financial planning, and then several years later they came back and wanted to get divorced, but they didn't want to be able to have the divorce in court. They wanted to be able to separate their assets logically and be able to say, how can we walk out of here where we can still be friends? So that was something that intrigued me to bring me into learning more about mediation, and then from mediation I was trained in 1998 in collaborative and been doing that exclusively since 1998 on.
Wonderful.
You know, this word collaborative keeps coming up in collaborative law. Amy, what is truly collaborative law? What does that mean?
Well, first of all, you need to know that just because people say they can collaborate does not mean they're actually doing collaborative practice. Collaborative practice requires a specially trained group of people who have had initial education and continuing education in this field. And the main thing you need in a collaborative divorce is two collaboratively trained lawyers. Now, what happens is collaborative is a non-adversarial team approach to solving legal problems. So the clients work with a team of professionals, including lawyers, mental health professionals, financial neutrals, and depending on the case, possibly other experts that help them as a team solve the problems that arise in their divorce without litigation. They achieve their solutions in a series of meetings with other professionals, not in court battles. It's a transparent process. We pride ourselves on full disclosure. We don't do any of the nasty discovery battles that lawyers do, trying to subpoena witnesses, subpoena documents, that sort of thing. Everything is all up, open and above board and on the table. And most importantly, the professionals agree that at no time during our representation of these clients are we going to go to court. That helps keep us at the table. It helps keep emotions to a minimum. It helps keep people's egos out of it, and generally helps clients move forward. So the concept of collaborative really, when you come down to it, means that the law is less important than the people involved. And that's what we try to keep in mind.
So, Marcia and Bob, are you sitting at the actual table with Amy and other attorneys then? So you guys are all there together with the clients?
Well, sometimes we are there together with the entire, what we call the team, the entire professional team. At other times, I am meeting with the clients by myself or with another divorce coach, depending. If I am a divorce coach in the process, I am usually meeting with my client and with the another divorce coach. So the clients together are meeting with two coaches, and we are working together. Let me give you an idea that might help you put this together a little bit better, and that is if you've ever been to the symphony, when you are there early and you are hearing the symphony, you're hearing the musicians warm up. Each instrument sounds different, okay? It sounds different when they're playing by themselves and warming up, and it doesn't really sound very good. Then the music starts, and everybody is playing together, and all of a sudden you get a beautiful sound. Well, in the collaborative process, once you get the professional team to all work together, then you are actually providing the best area of expertise to your clients, and you are getting a wonderful outcome.
So, Bob, now, are you coordinating behind the scenes as well with Amy and Marsha, or kind of how does your role fit in with the collaborative team?
Yeah, my role fits in. We do work at times with everybody together. I work with the clients always together. So when I meet with the clients, I will always meet with the couple. From that time, what will happen a lot of times is after we gather the information, start to work through their financial situations, I will meet with both attorneys and the clients to be able to educate the clients, educate the attorneys as to what the clients' situations are. We look at their taxes. We look at their cash flow. We look at the future if there's estate pieces or retirement planning for them. From there, there are many times that we will have the coaches come in. And there can be any type of configuration. We refer to three ways, four ways, five ways, up to eight ways. And that's when everybody's there. And as Marcia said, it's when everybody starts to come together and you start to see the collaborative pieces work. The piece that we really push is that we want everybody to work outside of the box, think outside of the box, to be able, there are no wrong answers. It's their divorce, their situation. We want to be able to help them.
Now, Bobby, you referred to yourself as a financial neutral. So that means that the client's actual advisors or their financial advisors, they're not at the table at this point. You are acting as a third party, outside objective person coming up with ideas for solutions. Is that?
That's correct, yes. And there are times, though, that if they have financial advisors and they request that those financial advisors can attend, by all means, we would love to have them come in. We don't draw the lines in the sand saying you work for this or you work for that. The way I always look at it is I work for the process, so I don't work for either party. And having their advisors there a lot of times helps the situation move along quicker because they do have all the information and we're able to work off of that information. So we're not necessarily going back and saying your information is wrong. We actually take that information to heart and able to work with it.
Let me give a scenario that I think in the world of family business that I'd like to know. And Amy, let me kind of start with you. And if everybody, I'm sure you all will all have a perspective. What is truly the effect in a family business if you have a divorcing spouse, you know, that wants a piece of ownership? The client might own a piece of the family business but is getting divorced, so that spouse comes in and says, well, you know, how's this going to work? I want my piece of the pie. So what happens from there?
Well, of course, everything depends on the structure of the business and how that works. But we can put together creative solutions so that, for example, in some family businesses we've done divorces for, the parties have both worked in the business, and we've allowed the parties to continue to work in the business even after the divorce. So that's an option that works in a very rare number of cases, but it is an option. Sometimes, you know, it really depends on the business itself. What I usually say, though, is that collaborative practice is best used with service-oriented business as opposed, it's not that you can't use collaborative with a regular business, but with service-oriented businesses, it so depends on the skills of the people working in the business. And typically, the business cannot survive the loss of one of those people. So it's vitally important in that instance that you have a collaborative team throwing out options to be able to allow this business to survive the divorce.
Well, let me ask you a question, too. I know typically with family business owners that we see, that we talk to, that Pat and I know, when you look at their balance sheet, the majority of their assets is stock that's held in this privately held family business. And maybe they have some real estate. They might have some retirement assets or some basic investments. But the majority is stock in this privately held company. So if you have a spouse that's not involved in the business and now wants his or her piece of the pie, how does that work?
Well, primarily, we go back and look again. We look at what the stock is. We come up with our values. We will always use business valuators. So I'm not a business valuator. I don't value the business. We will go out, hire someone who's agreed upon with everybody, come back with that value, and then start discussion. A lot of the discussion is emotion. It's just not financial. There's emotions tied to it. At the end, though, after going through working, we pretty well have come up with some successful solutions. It might be using property settlement notes. It might be where one party says, well, I can move more of my assets over to you, to the other spouse, so that I can retain the stock in the company. We've had some where they've just said, well, you know, pay me out more in a stream of payments, whether it be through alimony. And that can work out fine also. So we really, in collaborative, we open up our minds as to what's there and listen to them rather than having something dictated.
One of the pieces that I think is important is to understand that 90% of a divorce is often an emotional, there's so much, it's an emotional process. And so when you are dealing with a business, you're wondering what's a divorce coach role in this, in the business. And yet we're very involved because there is usually a breakdown in communication. And it is the role of the divorce coaches to help make sure that everybody can articulate what they are feeling, what they're needing, what their future is going to look like. And if we can encourage dialogue between the parties, and then they can come up with a better agreement where everybody is on board. So the future will end up looking better for them.
Can I speak to that and give you a real life example of what Marcia was just talking about? We had a case, I think all of us in this room had a case about 3 or 4 years ago with a couple who owned several properties, and most of their wealth was in that real estate. The wife, whose skill set was, you know, she had been a wife and mother, was insistent on receiving that real estate as part of the settlement. They didn't have enough assets for her to get the real estate and for him to continue to work the business. With some investigation from the coaches and some sessions with the coaches, we determined that really what she was looking for was security. She wanted the security of having land and having a building regardless of what it meant financially. And so once we were able to identify that issue, the coaches did a great job at figuring out a way for her to get what she needed so that he could keep the real estate, continue to run the business, and everybody went away happy.
Can I step back a minute? You know, I think there's probably somewhere in our audience, I'm going to make the assumption that there's some people listening who have said, I'm in a marriage that I'm not really happy with, but we're completely locked together in this family business. I don't know a way out. What can I do? So hopefully this will give them that answer to make them step forward. And I'm assuming, Amy, that most of the time the ball starts in your court. And I think it might be helpful for our listeners to hear, once someone picks up the phone, says they are considering divorce, explains that through your questioning it's a family business involved, what happens next? What can that person expect if they contact you and you suggest this? How does that actually play out?
Sure. Well, the first thing they do is schedule an appointment to come in and talk to me, and together we determine if their case is really appropriate for collaborative. Because not every case is. Some cases are better in litigation. But once they sit down with us or with me and they determine that their case is appropriate for collaborative, then I send them away with information on collaborative to share with their spouse. I send them with a list of referral attorneys that I work with, that I've had good experiences with, that their spouse might want to talk to. Once the spouse has then hired a lawyer, the attorneys will get on the phone together and do what we call triage the case. Find out if there are any emergent issues, anything we need to deal with immediately. If not, we have what's called our first four-way meeting. And that's when the lawyers and the clients sit together, go over the rules for the process, sign the documents that are required to sign, but most importantly, where we identify the other team members, what they need in terms of professional help, and we get them started on a path toward referral to those other team members. So after they've met with us the first time, we send them out the door to let Bob and Marcia do their work. And actually, the attorneys, unless there's an emergency issue or something that's going on, the attorneys typically then step back until much of the financial work has been done and it's time to start generating options.
To speak to the emotion of these family businesses with what you guys were talking about before, let's say you have Junior, basically, that's getting ready to go through the divorce. And what does that affect from a psychological standpoint, Marcia, to the other business owners with mom and dad? When Junior is getting ready to get the divorce and they're dealing with issues of the stock, you know, and this speaks to the financial side as well, but what are you seeing? Are you actually talking to the other members of the family business? Are there any trends that you're hearing from the member that's getting the divorce that owns part of the business? Or
the majority of my contact is with the person that's getting divorced. However, we know that there's a family system here, and part of that family system will include that member's parents, grandparents, children, sometimes neighbors. I mean, it depends on the family system. So if there is a family business, I might have involvement in working with the other members, and that really just depends on the situation. But most of my information I am getting from the client themselves. Sometimes my client will ask that a family member be brought in so that they can have information, or they can share information with me. They can communicate what their concerns are. And sometimes I have clients that just don't really understand the financial piece to the business. They might have been very involved, but they were not involved in the business of the business. So that's where I might use an extended family member and have them a part of the process.
Did you have any thoughts on that, Bob? Or
no, you know. Again, a lot of it for the financial side is educating the client. As Marcia said, you have a person who's in the family business but really doesn't understand totally a lot of it. So what we do is we really tend to spend a lot of time educating them to make sure they do understand. One of the big things we look for is to have everybody on a level playing field so that nobody has any nobody can come back and say, I didn't realize or I didn't know.
Great.
You know, I don't know, Marcia, if you can address this or any of you, if this has ever come up. I happen to have gone through being a senior executive in a family business. And unfortunately, the owners didn't use such a process as yours. And they really tried to keep it hidden from the other employees. And then, of course, they burdened me with keeping it hidden from the other employees. And as you can imagine, for me, it was a very difficult situation, and that happens a lot. There are non-family members in senior roles that when this starts, it really can impact them, and guess what, then the rest of the business. Has that come up? How have you handled that, if so?
Well, so no longer were you just dealing with the stress of the issue, but now you are having to deal with the stress of hiding it from other family, from other business members, and coworkers, and so my job is to be able to address how do I reduce your stress as best as possible, and to work with those that are involved so that we can give you the best possible outcome. In your situation, yes, it was not done collaboratively. In a collaborative process, we would have looked at that and tried to work on maybe there's a different way to get you through that. Mm-hmm. And maybe the goals that the other members in the business had could still be reached, but in a different way, in a healthier way for everybody around, because I'm sure that had to be stressful to you as well as to other members of the professions, of other professionals. So a lot of it is trying to teach how to communicate, and also that there are other options. There are other options to getting to where you want to go.
Mm-hmm. Have you guys worked a case, or have you seen case studies on it where the divorcing spouse has, because the proper planning wasn't done on the front end, but ended up getting a portion of the family business? Anybody?
Yeah, I've actually one that turned out to be successful. And it was one that we brought in a strategic planner because both parties realized that they weren't sure the company could survive without both of them. So they worked through. It was, I want to say, it took about almost 18 months. But we brought somebody in from out of state who had worked with families going through crisis as a strategic planner. Worked with them before we finished up getting the financial pieces put down.
But this, what about a spouse that was never involved in the business? Have you guys seen cases where they've actually gotten stock because there really wasn't, there weren't any other options?
Yeah, we had an early on case that was collaborative, and she did receive stock in the company. It was a family-owned business, a private company, and that lasted about 24 months, where she came back and then said, this isn't working, and everybody's still bickering. How can we work through this? And we actually worked a formula out to have her bought out over a period of time.
So it sounded like that had a pretty big impact on the family dynamic by bringing this outsider in and in a kind of forced sort of legal way.
Yeah, exactly.
And let's look at the impact that it has when you have a family business that maybe the wife really helped in the development by staying home, taking care of the children, managing the household issues, and allowing their partner to work 12, 16, 18 hours a day, and as well as, you know, going to parties and marketing and doing a lot of PR. And then there's a divorce, and now we have a very successful business. So from an emotional standpoint, we are also talking about ending that spouse's relationship within the business, and what does that look like?
Amy, what are some things, especially for our family business owner listeners, what are things to do where we don't, they don't have to worry about if they are contemplating a divorce, as Pat indicated? Are there certain documents that they need to have ahead of time to avoid a divorcing spouse to be able to retain any sort of control or ownership? I mean, what are some legal basics that you can give?
Well, I think one of the things that we need to remember is that the advice that I would give a client contemplating a divorce in litigation would be much, much different from the advice that I would give a client contemplating a divorce in collaborative. One of the things, you know, that nobody does, and if I had my druthers, everybody on the planet would do, is even in a family business, have your documentation complete. Have your buy-sell agreements, your operating agreements, your shareholders' agreements, because you never know what's going to come down next week or next month. Somebody could get sick. A spouse could try to step into the void. You could have a divorce. So the biggest thing that family business owners can do is plan early and often.
How do you integrate the divorce component into the buy-sell, and typically in what capacity do they address it within the buy-sell?
Well, I have to tell you, that's kind of not my area of expertise. But, you know, all buy-sell agreements can address whatever future events you might be able to anticipate. So, you know, for instance, in the event of a divorce, what I would see is agreements that would provide that any stock that the non-owning spouse might get as part of the divorce would be automatically bought back by the company at whatever rate is set in the buy-sell, so that you're not stuck with the ownership and a spouse who is no longer a spouse continuing to have their fingers in that pie.
So, Amy, you started out describing what happens when they first pick up the phone and call you. And, mm-hmm. and you know, I'm assuming that some maybe have this idea of we want it to be more collaborative, and in some instances you're just able to ascertain that that might be the best outcome. So by the time they've left your office, they've figured out that they want to at least try that pathway. Bob, when they come in and talk to you, now there's kind of the handoff. What happens next so our listeners can kind of see this unfolding? As they go to you, what do you counsel them? What kind of information? And maybe contrast that a little bit with had it not been on this through this filter of collaboration.
Yep. Primarily, as they come in, you know, what we're going to do is we're going to gather all their documents, and we're going to really listen, and we want to be able to completely understand where they are in this situation. We also want to make sure that both parties have a clear understanding. A lot of times when you think about it, one spouse has all the knowledge. Even if it's a working couple in a business, one spouse still has the knowledge. So what we want to always make sure is that the other spouse has the understanding, and are you okay with what's being said? Do you have questions? We work through those pieces. From there, we start to go through and work out some solutions. One rule we always have is first meetings never have any solutions. It's strictly to gather the information. Then we start to look at solutions and options. As we go through the process, many times I'll start to see pieces of emotions coming in. And I know we've talked about this just before, but emotions are tied to the financial probably 99% of the time. Those are the times when I'll go back to the coaches and say, here's what's happening. We're never going to move ahead and be able to get any decisions until we get these other pieces. What happens a lot of times are the coaches will come in, and the coaches will come back in to sit with us, and we'll actually start brainstorming. And when that starts to happen, if they start to wander off, the coaches can bring them back and play a lot of what-ifs along on the financial.
So I see the synergy perfectly. So they pick up the phone and call Amy and say, this is an untenable situation, and I think I want to move forward to divorce, but I don't want it to disturb the family. So this becomes the solution that you put on the table. Bob, they go to you, and you start talking about the money, and that's when all of those things surface.
Yes.
And I'm assuming that that's when that ball gets tossed to you, Marcia.
Well, sometimes it gets tossed to me from the financial neutral, but it can also get tossed to me from the attorneys. And that is the benefit of being collaborative, is that we get to be as creative as we like. So if the client needs to go to the financial neutral first, then they do. If the client needs to see the divorce coaches first, then they do. They might also simultaneously be bringing the kids to the child specialist, because we don't want to forget about the important piece, the child-centered piece of collaborative. And so all of these meetings might be happening at once. And like you heard Amy say, the lawyers, after initiating the collaborative process, might take a back seat. And so my job as the divorce coach will be to meet with my client and to ascertain what are the issues that we have going through the divorce process, and how can you look into the future and begin to see yourself in that uncoupling process, and then see yourself as co-parents, and see yourself maybe not being a part of a business if you were in a business together. So I will identify all of the issues, the concerns, and then share that with the other divorce coach, and we will then start working in a four-way. And if there is an issue regarding a business and other members in the business, then we're going to identify that. You heard buy, sell. You heard terms that are thrown out, quadros, or a lot of our clients don't even know what these things mean. And so it's my job to make sure that it is the communication is clear, that there's a clear understanding of the process of what has to occur in the business, what has to occur in the family, so that we can move these people into another place, a place of becoming a binuclear family, and whatever and however that looks. So I will work with the other coach in what we call our four-way meetings. I might be called into a meeting with the financial neutral, where I'm there with my client in the financial neutral, where we are just working on just trying to get my client to have a better understanding of what's happening. And then again, the financial neutral might work with the two coaches and the clients together so that we can help the clients to come up with agreements and with solutions. We certainly know that when you're invested in the solution and you've helped to develop it, that it's probably going to be a solution that has a better outcome.
It sounds like it's, when I listen to you, and probably some of our listeners are thinking, God, this sounds like it must be a very slow process, because there's a lot of slowing down in order to take the emotion out, because when you have something moving faster, the emotion seems to build. And they may be thinking, but I really don't want it to drag on that long. So talk to me a little bit about how you explain on the other side, the upside benefit, and what should they realize will be the upside benefit to slowing down and taking their time in this process with you folks?
I think that's a really important piece to the collaborative process. Collaborative is often thought of as being more for lower conflict situations, and it really is not. We have a lot of high conflict cases that we can talk about for hours with you, but we won't. As a result of that, what happens is you're having to work harder as you go through this process. So from an emotional standpoint, you are actually working through a lot of the issues that you would not be working through if you did not have the professional team there and the professional expertise to make sure that you were getting through these issues. And that does not happen in a litigated situation. In a litigated situation, you have your two attorneys that are working, and as a result of that, the attorneys are doing what they know best, and that is how to litigate your case. But they don't know how to address the emotional impact of a divorce. And so we are working through a lot of those issues as you're going through the divorce process in collaborative, so that when it's all done, you don't have a lot of pieces that you have to pick up. You then can kind of take off and run with the idea that you are now co-parents and you are now a binuclear family, and you can pick up and move in a healthier way.
I'd like to address the timing issue very quickly. One thing that people, just the general public, does not understand is the incredible amount of time it takes to litigate a case, particularly a litigated divorce case. Every county in Georgia is different, but a litigated case can take anywhere from 4 months to 7, 8, 9, 10 years. Now, that's worst-case scenario, of course. But it's important to educate clients when they start thinking about, you know, this collaborative process sounds slow, and we're only going as fast as the slowest team member, to understand that they're still working. And in my experience, most collaborative cases finish earlier or sooner than a litigated case of similar complexity in that county. So it's all a matter of perspective, really.
I have a question for all of you guys. If you take this family business, this multi-generation family business owner again, and let's take the example, I keep having the son be the one getting the divorce, but the son is the one getting the divorce. Are you all seeing trends where the child is wanting to move faster because he's upset the apple cart, so to speak, with his parents and other family members just to make the case go away, and knowing that, you know, hey, I've really messed up this family unit and with the way that we're set up? What kind of trends have you guys seen there when you're dealing with multi-generational type businesses? I know it's an interesting topic.
I think we're all sitting here thinking real quick as to who. I think, you know, some of the trends have been, I have seen where that the person who's involved, the son, wanting to move along. I've also seen the senior parents come in and try to slow down because they're hoping maybe that they can come back together and have reconciliation. So they're not, you know, as fast to pull the trigger. Again, we have to separate at times as to whose divorce it is and, you know, who we are employed by. Because a lot of times we're not employed by the senior members of the family. We're employed by that couple. Again, each one stands on its own, though.
You know, as I listen, Amy, I heard you say it really isn't that slow, that it's going to produce a better outcome. And, Marcia, I heard you really say, you know, it takes the emotion out. So it sounds to me like when you can take the emotion out, you end up on the other side much healthier and therefore able to start back on the path of running that business effectively. Bob, from a financial point of view, what have you seen? Does this cost less in the long run? Is it equal? How would somebody look at this in trying to make a decision of whether this process is right for them?
We actually have research done by the International Academy of Collaborative Professionals. They've been tracking over 1,000 cases currently, and the time situation is 7 to 8 months on average from start to finish. Costs are less than typical litigation cases. It's hard to put a percentage to it. I know here in Atlanta we've looked, and it's running about $24,000 to $26,000. And I know I've always asked, and I can ask Amy this, for a typical litigation case in Metro Atlanta.
Well, I got it. First of all, my constant disclaimer is there is no typical litigation case. But for a litigation case that would go to a jury trial of, say, medium complexity, you're talking about $100,000 each just for the lawyers. So to have a collaborative case that costs $25,000 for every single professional in the room and gets you a better result definitely gets you more bang for your buck.
Excellent. You know, it's clear you all started out in your practice kind of more traditionally, and then all have moved much closer into this path. Amy, I think I saw you're about 70% of your practice now is collaborative. Each of you could explain what took you to this pathway. I think it might help people understand why three really great professionals took a look at this and said, we think this is a better pathway.
Well, for myself, as a licensed clinical social worker, we are trained in what's called family systems, which means we're trained in working with any organizational system, whether it's a family, whether it's a business, whether it's a corporation. We are trained to look at things that way. So working by myself in private practice as a psychotherapist, I found that I was missing the other pieces. And so I could work with somebody regarding their divorce, the emotional implications of their divorce, but I also was missing other pieces. And for me, to have the other piece, to understand the financial aspects of it, to understand the legal aspects of any kind of dissolution was incredibly powerful and important. And it helps me then to be able to provide the information to my clients so that they really understand the dynamics of all of those other pieces. And if I can work with the entire system, then, again, the outcome is going to be better. And going from a more traditional individual psychotherapist and moving into more of a team member, that helps my practice and that helps my clients because I know that I cannot give information, legal information. I can give some basic information, but I know that I can have my team member, which is the professional team, and if I'm on a team with Amy, then I can go ahead and say, you need to speak with the person that has that area of expertise, and that's a legal question. You need to speak with the attorney. That's right there. We are all part of the one team. It's very, very powerful when you work with an entire team. And we consider our clients as part of that team because our clients in this process make the agreements.
Amy, what made you make this such a big piece of your practice?
Well, I've been doing exclusively family law for almost 10 years now. And from the time I started doing just family law, I started to see how destructive the divorce process is. And, you know, I'm not a fan of divorce. I'm really not. I would rather people stay married. But if they're going to get divorced, I think I could help them in a healthier way, a way that helps their children and helps them move into a binuclear family. In about 2001 or 2002, I started doing guardian ad litem work, which is where a lawyer is appointed to represent the children in a divorce case. And when I started doing that work, I saw the incredible destructiveness of the litigation process on the children particularly and the family as a whole. And so, I started thinking there's got to be a better way. And Collaborative was young and in its early stages. Lauren Alexander talked me into taking the training. And here we are, and I think we're getting better results.
And Bob, how about yours?
Mine was more from personal. Been married twice and divorced twice. Both of them, neither one went to litigation. We sat at the table and actually worked it out. Children involved in the second marriage. We learned how to co-parent. After knowing that I could do it that way, then working with couples, I worked for a long time as an expert witness. My last case is what did it in for me, watching the destruction of the four little children with a very high-powered couple. And to this day, I still kind of keep in touch, and they're still battling, and that's been more than 12 years. That was a piece that said I just cannot let families go this way. We've got to be able to find a better way.
That's great insight. It definitely seems like collaborative is more cutting edge. Are there any other tips that you guys can give family business owners, again, that are contemplating divorce? What are some key things that you can indicate that they should be doing?
Well, I'll start that. My first tip I've already said, which is collaborate early and often. Definitely have your business agreements in place so that whatever happens, whether it's a divorce or something else, it doesn't take your business down with it. My other advice is if you are in the collaborative process or in the process of dissolving either your marriage or your business, don't get too involved in any one solution. I personally went through a situation where the partnership structure in my law firm changed due to a disability, and so I see how easy it is to think you know what to do and to do it. But that's what you pay your team members for, is to help you brainstorm those options. There are things that you haven't even thought about that might be good solutions for whatever situation you're in, and if you get too invested in your own solution, you're not going to be able to be open to those.
Mm. Marcia, do you have any ideas or thoughts from a preemptive standpoint that family business owners need to be aware of if they're contemplating divorce?
Well, again, very close to what Amy is saying, is that you really want to go in and understand that there's usually more than one way to resolve an issue. And so it's incredibly important to be open-minded and to say that I can be creative, the other people around the table can be creative, and we can come up with numerous agreements. It's just which ones will work best for you. I also want to be able to mention that the collaborative process is moving into the civil arena. It is starting to take off in other parts of the country, and we have a movement in the Atlanta area where we are beginning to move into the civil arena, working in the area of estate and probate, working with businesses. So collaboratives is something where we are then using facilitators instead of divorce coaches and using other specialists. But it is something that that there are many people that are already using it and don't even realize that they're using it, but we are making it making it a viable program that's being offered through the collaborative process.
Bob, anything preemptive?
No, I mean, really, I think Amy and Marcia have pretty much, put it together. I think the big tip is, as Amy said, you know, have your documents, know what they say, and keep your records. The records, a lot of times, and especially family businesses, are sometimes forgotten. To have those records, it just makes everything easier to go back and start to put the pieces together.
One thing I want to mention is for people who are contemplating starting a family business, you can use the collaborative process to negotiate your agreements and make sure that all of these things are in place first. As Marcia said, this, we're starting to see it in the civil arena, and there are collaboratively trained lawyers now who are working in the area of corporate formation and corporate litigation. So, you know, don't pigeonhole collaborative into any one area. Use it early and often.
Excellent. What if a listener is listening to us and they didn't hear about this? Our show hadn't been on. They hadn't heard about this. And they have started down a path of a divorce through a more traditional, not necessarily going to litigation, but a more traditional, what I would consider adversarial way of getting a divorce. Is there still time to step back? Can this come into play even as the process has started?
There is always time to step back before a judge signs an order or before the final agreements are signed. I personally have several cases, actually I've had four cases in the last year that have been in the process of traditional litigation in the middle of things and heard about collaborative, fired their lawyers, dismissed their cases, and have done them collaboratively. So I'm not a big advocate of firing lawyers, but it is never too late to go through the collaborative process if you're committed to doing it and if you're committed not to litigate.
Excellent. So I mentioned earlier that I was embroiled in one, and I mean, it's been many, many years, and I still can look back, and it was like it was yesterday. How often, when you're working with your clients, are you bringing the employees top of mind to them? I'm sure they're thinking about the family that's in the business, but do you suggest to them that they turn the business over to somebody senior because they're very distracted? Do you help them at all in that process of, Marcia, I imagine it would often come in your chair, but how do you help them, or do they? Does that come into play that you help them figure out how to keep the other folks in the business sane, and then also how do they keep running the business day to day when, you know, this obviously can be very consuming both emotionally and from a time point of view.
Well, and again, it depends how well the client is functioning. And so if there are a lot of challenges and the client is having difficulties functioning, working with the other employees, going in every day, being successful at the business that they're trying to run, if there are problems with that, then the coaches are going to address that. If there are not any issues and the business continues to run smoothly, then we don't have to address it. So it really depends on the situation. We absolutely check in with our clients. How are you doing not only from a family perspective, but how are you doing in terms of the business, in terms of your job, your responsibilities? We're looking at everything that client is involved in. So we're looking at the entire system of the client.
Excellent. So if we were to have each one of you kind of state your case, so now we have a family that is contemplating the fact that it needs to move towards divorce. Would each of you just give the tip of how do you start the things in motion, best case scenarios, once you've come to that conclusion? What's the first thing that you in each of your specialty areas would ask them to do to make the outcome be the most ideal? So it's almost like, you know, now we're going to be able to play the Monday morning quarterback in a sense, because most of the time, by the time they've gotten to you, there's probably been a few trips, things already put in motion that you personally as a professional would wish hadn't been. So let's start with Amy, and what would that be? And each of you if could think about what would that tip be?
For me, the most important thing would be for them to have an open, honest discussion with their spouse about the collaborative process, about their hopes for the collaborative process. And we get a lot of referrals from the internet. People are Googling collaborative practice now. Georgia has a collaborative practice statewide group called the Collaborative Law Institute of Georgia, which is www.collaborativepracticega.com. There is also an international organization, which is www.collaborativepractice.com. And so those sites and all of our websites actually give clients a lot of information. The more information they have when they start, the better off they're going to be at the end.
Excellent. Bob?
I think being able to play off of what Amy said, making sure that they can respect each other and listen to each other. They'll be able to come up with their solutions and hopefully a happier ending to it.
Excellent. And Marcia?
I think the important piece is to be true to yourself, to be honest in what you need. When most people look at it, it's not just what they themselves need. It's what's the best outcome for everybody, whether that's for the kids, whether that's for the soon-to-be ex-spouse, whether that's for the employees that are in the business. Most people will be honest. When they're honest, they realize that they're looking for the best possible outcome for everybody.
So what I heard is begin with the end in mind, but in your case, you're coaching them not to have the end simply be we're divorced, but
Correct.
A much bigger picture of that.
Correct. Yeah.
Absolutely. And what we'd like to do is go around and have each of you let us know where listeners might be able to get in touch with you, your phone number, your email, your website. Amy?
Sure. I can be reached at my office at 770-641-8200. My email address is awagoner, W-A-G-G-O-N-E-R, at atlanta-familylaw.com. And our email address is www.atlanta-familylaw.com.
And my office is located in the Roswell area, and you can reach me at 770-753-4911. And it's Marcia Shechman, Marcia, M-A-R-S-H-A, Shechman, S-C-H-E-C-H-T-M-A-N, at Atlanta, N-P-C, .com. So that's Marcia Shechman at AtlantaNPC.com, and it's www.AtlantaNorthPsychotherapyCenter.com.
And my website is www.CPCAdvisors.com, and my email is Bob at U2, the letter U, the number 2, agree, AGREE.com, and the best way to reach me by phone is 888-U2-AGREE.
I'd just like to say one other thing, and that is that we are all a part of, we're founding members of the Atlanta Collaborative Divorce Alliance, so you can reach all of us through that website, which is, Bob?
ATL-divorce.com.
Excellent. And for all of you listening, you can actually, we'll be able to download this entire podcast. It should be up on our site probably no later than Monday, and it will remain there going forward. So it can be a point of reference, and you can download that at www.familybusinessradio.businessradiox.com. And actually, all of the contact information, in case you were driving and didn't have your pen handy, you will be able to find name, phone number, and websites for the folks. And we will also be sure when we put the announcement up from the show or the podcast from the show, we'll include some of the addresses to some of the collaborative resources that you've mentioned, because it sounds like an informed client is a great client for the three of you. So we'll make sure that that happens. But in the meantime, thank you so much. I hope that our listeners learned that there might be a better way out listening to this.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, everybody have a great weekend.